to Comic Talk today for Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. And this is the episode of the week in which I talk about some of my favorite reads from last week's New Comic Book Day. And unlike the last few weeks, there's not many books that I want to actually talk about this week. Looks like I have two Marvel, one Black Crown, one Image, one Valiant, one IDW, and one DC. So what should we kick off? Let's kick off with Marvel. And I will start off with Cable number 159, written, of course, by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, with art by German Peralta. And this is the final issue in the five-issue arc that these guys were tasked in telling the new Cable story. And I gotta say, if you haven't been reading this series, then you're not gonna understand what is happening here. But I absolutely adore this issue. It is very much a wrap-up of the entire storyline. And basically, it follows Cable and Mitas, the new villain that we've had throughout this five-issue run, as they have their final showdown. And Cable manages to get the techno-organic virus out of Mitas. And we learn a whole lot about the story behind these two guys. So it seems like Mitas was Cable's, I would say, best friend when he was little. So we get a lot of scenes about Cable being bullied for having this cybernetic arm. And, you know, they talk about, like, having mutant parents. And, of course, in this future, the mutant thing is kind of weird. So people are very much put off by mutants. And when Mitas is a shapeshifter, he's also a mutant. And he comes in touch with Cable, and the techno-organic virus kind of changes him. And, you know, they have it out kind of in the woods. And when Cable tries to stop him, he injects more of the virus into him. And this is when Mitas kind of becomes corrupted. And he's shape-shifting quite a bit in the woods. Finally, Cable's parents come out, of course, and they kind of stop this whole thing. Mitas runs away and goes home. And while he's going home, he's still kind of dealing with this organic virus flowing through him. So he can't quite revert back to his original shape. And his dad's like, oh my God, who the hell are you? There's a monster in the house. We gotta kill him. Like, you know, let's go after this guy. His parents are very afraid of him. His younger siblings, of course, realize that it's Mitas, right? He's saying to them, look, it's me. It's your son. And they don't understand because they're afraid of the mutant. And it was very touching to see that. And then the whole town goes after Mitas. And that's when he decides, like, you know, Cable did this to me. Or Nathan, rather. Nathan did this to me. I'm going to prevent him from ever being near the people that he loves. And that's why, you know, we've gone into this whole adventure for the past five issues. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Very, very touching. A lot of great moments in here. And, of course, at the end, we do see Mitas kind of be redeemed in some way. We'll see if his story picks up somewhere else, but I'm very curious to see how that ends up being. He does get sent to the school, so maybe Kitty Pryde and the rest of the X-Men will kind of train him, and really, really nice touching moment. I wish we would have had a little bit more of Cable and Hope in this final issue. Hope does help Cable quite a bit in defeating Mitas, because when Cable absorbed Mitas' virus, he's kind of growing and growing and growing, and Hope shows up, and she uses her abilities to kind of help Cable expunge the virus from himself. And that was actually pretty cool. They referenced Cable 100, which was the other time that that happened as well. And really nice touching moment, though. So overall, I really dug this. I dug this issue quite a bit. Obviously, I'm a fan of Zach and Lonnie, so that does help quite a bit. But Cable, this series has been fantastic. I wish it had been a little bit longer. I do hope that we get to see these guys do more with Cable. I don't know if X-Force maybe, but I think it'd be interesting. I do know that they're doing, I mentioned this yesterday, they're working on the Apocalypse backup story for the new X-Men Black one-shot books that'll be coming out. So I look forward to seeing that. And yeah, overall, really dug it. The five-issue arc is also fantastic, so I recommend you pick that up. This will read really nicely in trade. I think it's probably a little unfortunate that they continued the legacy numbering here. I don't know if they actually expected this to last more than five issues, or if the entire thing was always made to be five issues. But whenever this comes out in trade, I think it'll read great. Overall, I'm going to rate this one a 4 out of 5. Really, really loved it. And love the cover as well. Fantastic image. On to another Marvel book. Let's talk about Jessica Jones. And this is a digital original story written by Kelly Thompson with art by Mattia DeYulis. And this was interesting. I read a little bit about, apparently Bendis tapped Kelly directly to write Jessica Jones when he knew he was going to be leaving Marvel. And this is part of the back matter in this issue, so you don't need to go anywhere to look it up. Kelly actually relates the story. Apparently she received a DM on Twitter from Bendis, and he's like, look, I want to talk to you. And she's like, hell yeah, Bendis wants to talk to me. So they talked for quite a while, and he's like, I love your work on A-Force and a lot of other stuff. He's like, I want you to take over Jessica Jones when I leave. And so this has been in the works for quite a while. I think it was just announced that she was going to be doing it maybe less than a month ago. And I'm really happy that she did pick up Jessica Jones, because I absolutely love this issue. There's definitely threads in here of what Bendis has been doing, right? I mean, Bendis created this character. He's been with this character for many years. Bendis and Gatos. So let me rephrase that. He's been with the character for many, many years. He's the only one that's really written Jessica Jones. And now we have Kelly Thompson taking over. And I thought it was a brilliant first issue. Really, really nice. And as much as I love Gatos' art, I think Mattia Deulis has a really nice art style that fits very well with this. And it's obviously a little more comic booky, I would say, than what we're used to seeing in the Jessica Jones books. But I really, really dug it. We do get a nice exploration of Jessica and Luke Cage's family life. And there's some pretty funny moments in there as well. So I like to see that. But, you know, the majority of this issue focuses on Jessica herself. She goes into her PI office, and there's a dead body in there. And as she goes to see if the body is dead or not, the police burst in because she's kind of been set up. And from there, all sorts of things happen. We get to see this maybe new villain. I would assume new villain, right? All the Purple Man stuff is gone, supposedly. So this is a new villain that we have in here that ties in directly with this dead body, who is a previous case of Jessica's. She had investigated her ex-boyfriend, the dead girl's ex-boyfriend. And, you know, things go from there. There's some odd things, like she's investigating this murder, and she gets knocked over the head. She gets dressed up in a Ms. Marvel costume for some reason, and there's some pretty funny moments in there, which is interesting because, you know, you would think that in a moment like that, you wouldn't want to pursue a little comedy, but, you know, that's kind of Jessica Jones's character, so it fit very well here, and I really dug it. She, spoiler alert, she does get shot in the head, and her brain literally gets blown away, but she wakes up in a hospital. So she was actually killed. And that was really interesting. There's some cameos from various characters. Captain Marvel plays a big part of this issue because they do have a little bit of history. But we see like Iron Man, Captain America, and Spider-Man, and a few other characters show up. Eventually, we get to learn that Jessica is not the only superpowered being that has been shot in the head and killed. There have actually been a couple more, and one of them is Elsa Bloodstone, which I thought was really interesting. And she does make an appearance in this issue. Because, spoiler alert, she's not quite dead. So I'm very much looking forward to see what this mystery is. Who's killing these? It's pretty funny, because part of the dialogue between Captain Marvel and Jessica in the hospital is, well, there's other D-listers being killed. And Jessica's like, oh, wait, no, it's not with Captain Marvel. It's when Misty Knight shows up. Because Misty's got the Aberrant Crimes Division. And she's like, yeah, these listeners are getting killed. And Jessica's like, I'm not a D-lister. And Misty's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Because obviously they don't like each other. And the interaction in those pages is really awesome, actually, too. It happens in like a couple panels, and they're silent panels. And really, really dug it. I think this was a solid first issue. I kind of wish they would have done this in print. I'm not sure why they decided to do a digital original comic for this. I think Jessica Jones has always had a pretty strong following. And even now, even though Bendis is not there anymore, they could have easily just made this a comic and people would have bought it. So I do hope that they do bring this out in a physical copy. I'm sure they will. I don't know what the plans are. If I remember right, these will be out like collected in trade. They're not going to be out in singles. But I could be wrong. If I am, just feel free to correct me. At Geekvine on Twitter. Or nerdlegion@gmail.com is the email address. But really, really dug it. I love the art. I love Kelly Thompson's new take on this, right? Because it's still very much Jessica Jones and dealing with the same themes, the same topics, same relationships. But for some reason, this felt a little more lighthearted, but not in a way that would put me off, right? If you listen to this podcast, you know I hate like the happy-go-lucky stuff. And there's definitely a little bit of that here, but it makes sense with Jessica's personality because she's one of those people that really doesn't give a two rats about anything. right? So it makes perfect sense. Overall, I loved it, though. I almost made this my pick of the week. I decided not to, but really, really fantastic. I highly recommend you pick this up. It's going to be a 4 out of 5 on this one as well. Going up from there, let's go to Image and talk about The Weatherman number 2. And I'll talk about this very briefly because I think I spent quite a bit of time when the first issue came out. This is Jody LeHope and Nathan Fox, Dave Stewart. And this follows pretty much the events of the first issue. So if you're not caught up on the series, you will be mightily, mightily spoiled. And as it turns out, our Weatherman character is somebody else. Okay, and we learn who he is. He's a character named Ian Black, who was part of this military force that was part of the group that ended up killing the 8 billion people on Earth. And that's why, you know, he got kidnapped at the end of the first issue, even though he has no idea about any of this stuff. He went through some plastic surgery. He went through this memory reorganizing procedure. And so that's why he's a completely different guy. But we do see the whole process happen here. And we do learn that, you know, even though it's been 7 years since the death of everyone on Earth, the group that caused that to happen is actually still very much around, and they don't want to stop at just Earth. So they have like secret agents working at the at this Mars coalition, and one of them actually has a bomb strapped to her chest and ends up blowing up the station. They know that these people are there, so they send some missiles to try to shoot them down because they don't want the Weatherman to give him any information, right? Even though they don't know if it's possible to reverse the procedure, they don't want to give up any information because he knows kind of what the plans are, even if it's been a long-term plan. Overall, I really dug it. I think this is a fantastic series. I like this better than Shirtless Bear Fighter. I know it's the same writer, but I think this works a little bit better for me, maybe because it's a little more sci-fi and less kookiness. I mean, there's some kookiness, but I think this is a solid, solid series. If you're not reading Weatherman, I highly recommend you check it out. I'm going to rate this one a 4 out of 5 as well. From there, let's go on over to Valiant Comics, and I want to talk about Shadow Man. And you know, I haven't talked about Shadow Man in a couple of issues. You know, I talked about the first one and the second one, I think, and then I haven't talked about it since. Because, from issue 1 and 2, there was definitely a change for me in how much I enjoyed this book. And, you know, the more I read it, the more I really dig it. With issue 5, we go all the way back to the Civil War, because we're kind of exploring kind of previous Shadow Man figures. And this is the original Shadow Man that we start dealing with. And it works out so well. We saw Maxim Bodyface in the 40s in issue 4. Now we have the original Shadow Man, Marius Boniface. And, you know, this is, if you've been a fan of Shadow Man for a long time, you may remember in the first series that came out, like 2013, I think it was, there was a kind of a weird love triangle thing where you had Master Dark, who has been a villain of Shadow Man's for a long time, and his sister, Sandria Dark, and you also had Marius, right? When we learned about the history of the Shadow Man Loa. And Sandria and Marius Boniface were actually lovers at one point. And that's part of the reason why Master Dark was kind of gone a little crazy, because he's got this weird, like incestual love thing for his sister. And of course she was in love with Marius. And, you know, when Master Dark ended up finding them, he was going to kill Marius and maybe his sister, or at least take his sister away. And she performed a sacred voodoo ritual. She was pregnant with Marius's child, and she performed a ritual that ended up sacrificing that child, but created the Shadow Loa. And this is how the Shadow Man was born. And that gave Marius the ability to fight Dark off. Right? Even though their relationship did not go very well, supposedly Sandria was killed. Of course we know since then she was not, because she's shown up a few times. But this issue tells us the story of what actually happened to Marius and Sandria Dark. And I loved it. It was brilliant. As it turns out, Sandria didn't quite love him. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't really know, but this is what's stated. Pretty much she wanted to create the Shadow Loa to, you know, gain this ability, and she is back living with her brother, or at least maybe her brother's people, right? He's got a lot of bodyguards, and we learned a little bit about him. He was a racist slave owner, and that's how he gained his money. Really interesting stuff in here. Basically, Marius is enlisted by this guy, Kevin, or what's his name? John something, doesn't matter. He's enlisted by this guy to help people that are being accosted by Dark's people. And his name is not Dark yet, it's Calvin Rake in here. But it's the same character. And as a result, we learn a whole lot about their relationship. We learn about, obviously, Sandria and Marius' relationship. Marius ends up getting killed, but of course he has the Shadow Loa within him, so he is resurrected and he uses his Shadowman abilities to avenge this town and get rid of the people that are kind of almost enslaving the town to work in these mines. But a really solid issue. The art was pretty good. I wish it was a little more polished, to be honest. But it worked pretty well. I think this is Steven Segovia that's doing this. Andy Diggle is the... Oh, I probably should have said that. Andy Diggle is the writer. Doug Braithwaite is the artist. And for some reason, it seemed a little looser than Doug's pencils usually do. I'm not sure what the deal was with that. But it might have been with the inking, maybe. That's very possible. I don't know if he inked himself on this one or not. There's no inker listed, so I'm assuming he did. Overall, pretty solid issue, though. I really recommend you check out Shadow Man. It is above and beyond better than anything I think that we've seen out of Shadow Man. And it's really solid, and I don't think enough people talk about this book. I guess we'll rate this one, and I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Man, solid stuff this week so far. Let's go on over to IDW, and very briefly, I want to talk about Injustice versus Masters of the Universe, issue number 1. This is written by Tim Seeley. The art is Freddie Williams II. And if you are familiar with the Batman TMNT crossovers that they've done, same artist, so you'll be familiar with the art style. I really enjoyed this book quite a bit. I was extremely pleasantly surprised. When I first started reading the issue, I was a little confused, a little lost, because I mean, I grew up watching He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, but I haven't read a comic or rewatched any of that stuff in many years. I recently saw, probably what, like 3 weeks ago now, the Masters of the Universe movie with Dolph Lundgren, which is still god awful, but it was a lot of fun. And, but that's about it, right? I haven't had any exposure to these characters in a long, long time. And I think Seeley did a good job at bringing in kind of who these characters are, how the world of Eternia works, who the key players are. And of course, he has to quickly do that because he needs to introduce the world of Injustice, in which we learn that Superman has become the High Counselor and taken over all of Earth, and he's got people working for him, like Wonder Woman, for example, Shazam, etc. And I think that was done extremely well in the short amount of time that was given. In fact, I was really surprised by the amount of stuff that was put in here, because Zatanna and Swamp Thing are the ones that kind of kidnap Prince Adam in order to help Batman and the rest of the League fend off against an attack on their own Earth. And that was really interesting, the way that was done. There's a connection to the Green in here because, you know, when they're trying to convince everyone in Eternia that Adam should come with them, they're like, yeah, I don't know if we believe you, but Mossman is there. And he's like, yeah, Mossman's like, you know, Swamp Thing and I are both part of the Green. And like, I've seen what he has seen, and it's true. Like, you should let Adam help these people. And I thought that connection was so, so interesting, so well done. And there's quite a few of those thrown in here as well. Of course, Skeletor is helping out Superman, which I thought was really interesting. And I'm way behind on Injustice. Like, I recently just started reading Injustice, so I don't know how much of the stuff that happens in here has already happened in Injustice or is happening now. But, the fact that Superman's got Batman, this is the weird thing. Superman's got Batman as the Dark Oracle. And basically, it's like the Minority Report thing, where you have a pre-crime division. And yet we have this other Batman that's trying to recruit Prince Adam. I was a little confused by that. I hope that gets explained. And I know there's people that, you know, read Injustice, so please let me know what the hell that is about. But I really enjoyed this quite a bit. We end the issue with Apocalypse coming to Eternia, and I thought that was really cool. Or not Apocalypse, well, yeah, kind of. But we see Darkseid, and he's like, Darkseid is. And I was like, no, don't do this Darkseid is thing. But overall, I really enjoyed it. I think the art didn't work for me in some places, but overall, I'm kind of used to this art style. So it did work for me, I think, better than some other people. I know I've heard, for example, Aaron Bell of the Absolute DC podcast talk about how much he did not appreciate the art. But yeah, I think it was a solid issue, and I enjoyed it. I will definitely be continuing with this. It's a 6-issue miniseries. I don't know if it's, I don't think it's weekly, right? I would assume it's monthly. But, really, really good stuff. Really good stuff. I'm gonna give this one a 4 out of 5 as well. Let's go to Black Crown. And, I wanna talk about Euthanauts number 1. This is Tinny Howard with art by Nick Robles and letters by Aditya Bidikar. I really enjoyed this issue so much. It was interesting to read it because, you know, when I read the synopsis of this, and I put it on the Comet Predictor last week, I was like, you know, this is going to be a really interesting book. I'm interested to see how it actually plays out. And the whole setup of the book was really, really interesting. In some ways, it reminded me of a few other things. Like, I saw hints of Ether in here, like the Matt Kent book. And I think it worked really well. So basically, we kick off learning a little bit about how this world works, right? And there's groups of people that aren't afraid of death because death is just a continuation of life. And I like how that was explained because I kind of agree with that thing. Then we switch over back to kind of reality, I guess you could say, and to King's Fountain Funeral Home, and we meet our main character. And she works there as a receptionist, and they're supposed to be having like a company dinner, and it's not really a company dinner. Like, they go to a bar or a restaurant or whatever and have dinner, and she's running late, but they have a discussion about like communism kind of. Don't when I say that, don't be put off, because it's just like a one-liner. Just kind of to establish the kind of things that people talk about, okay? So this is not like one of those liberal versus right things. So don't get on that before you read this book. And she's obviously very much afraid of death, even though she works at a funeral home, which I found interesting, right? Some of the people that she works with don't have that feeling. But she definitely does. And right across from them, there's a table with another group of people. And there's a woman who I would assume has been undergoing chemotherapy, right? She's had cancer. Because she looks very frail, very white. She's got a bandana over her head. She's got like hoses hooked up to herself, and it must be her birthday because she's got a balloon on her equipment right next to her chair. And you know, she wonders like, what must it be like to want to go to a restaurant, and how would food taste if you know you're about to die, and like the kind of things, how you would think differently if you knew death was coming. And I thought, oh, that was so interesting, right? Because it's something that I think most people don't think about. At least not in any length whatsoever. I would say that a lot of people are definitely afraid of death. And I'm not one of those people. You know, I've had a lot of personal deaths in my own family, for example. You know, my mom passed away when I was fairly young. I was in my early 20s. So, you know, I'm familiar with this kind of thing. And as a result, I'm not afraid of death or anything that entails that, right? Like, I'm not afraid of... I mean, I would hate it if my wife or my kids got sick and died, of course. But I don't know. It just feels like one of those things that you shouldn't be sad about, right? Because you should always make the best that you can out of the time that you have with the people that you love. And yeah, it would suck, you know, if they go away. But it only sucks, really, if you didn't make the best out of that time, I think. Right? Like, you're always going to have that sad feeling, right? And I still think about like my mom or my grandfather. My grandfather died when I was like 6, right? But I was very close with him. And I always think about them, but never in a sad way, right? Like, I don't sit and cry like, oh, I wish my mom was back or my grandfather was back. But I do think about like the great times that we had, which were a lot, right? And I think that's what's important. And this character here doesn't really see any of that stuff, doesn't see a life in that way. And she goes to the bathroom, and the lady she was staring at kind of comes in there, and she's like, oh, like, hey, sorry, you startled me. And the woman's like, no. He's like, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm okay with dying, so don't feel bad for me. And she's like, oh, like, did you hear what we're talking about? She's like, no, I kind of assumed because you were staring and this and that and the other. They introduce each other to themselves, and they talk a little bit about it. And the woman takes her oxygen tank and knocks the main character down, and this is kind of when the story begins. And we learn that the woman knows that she's dying, and in fact, wants to use her to have a connection back to the real world, because part of the reason why in the afterlife is so empty is that a lot of people don't have somebody connect them back to reality. And I thought that was such an interesting way of doing it, right? And not, I don't think that's the way that we typically see it, right? If I think about other cultures, like Mexico, for example, right? So Mexico's got the Day of the Dead every year, where they remember their ancestors, right? Like, that would give those dead a thread back into our world, because they're not forgotten. Whereas in the culture that we live, at least the majority of us here, I think, in the United States, you know, like, you might remember your mother or your father or your whatever siblings, maybe your grandparents, but outside of that, like, who do you know in your family that is gone, right? Like, you wouldn't know your great-grandparents, maybe. Very few of us probably would. Or, you know, like, their parents or their parents. And I thought that was an interesting way of bringing that into the comic book. And tells her a really interesting story. In the meantime, we do see there's a group that is kind of looking for people that are dying to make this connection before they depart. And they refer to them as quote unquote euthanauts. And I thought that was a nice touch there. Overall, really solid. I love this first issue. I thought it was brilliant. The art is beautiful. There's shamanic stuff in there. There's like a little Harry Potter in some ways. And, it works very, very well. I really enjoyed Euthanauts number one. This is actually my pick of the week. I'm going to rate this a 5 out of 5. I guess that leaves only one book, and that book is from DC Comics. And that DC Comics book is Batman 51. And you are thinking to yourself, what in the hell is happening right now? Batman? Batman on this podcast? Martin's talking about Batman? And yes, I am. I am. I didn't talk about Batman 50 because, you know, Rich and I kind of talked a little bit about that. So I didn't put it in the top of the pile. But Batman 51 is out now. And that's, of course, Tom King with Lee Weeks. And I want to talk about it briefly because this might be my favorite issue of the entire run. And I know that's kind of weird to say. But it felt the most grounded to me, and I think that's why I enjoyed it. The dialogue read more like a traditional book than what I'm used to reading in a lot of these Batman Tom King stories. For example, Mike over at the Geek Brunch podcast jokes quite a bit about like the dark side is, or like, you know, they talk in nursery rhymes. And in some respects, I agree. And this issue had none of that, right? Like, there was actual genuine dialogue. And, you know, some of the premise maybe seemed a little weird. Like, I don't think there's any way in hell that Bruce Wayne would be allowed on a jury in Gotham City. But at the same time, like, there's a guy in here with a mohawk. Like, he would not be allowed in there either. You know what I mean? Like, just based on the what you would generally think somebody with a mohawk, like, their social attitudes would be, right? Like, I always think of, like, punk rockers, right? And even if that's not the case, like, that would be everyone's first assumption, right? And Bruce Wayne, like, you know, he's the richest man in Gotham, one of the richest men in the world. He's obviously got connections to Batman, right? He's funded Batman before. So that plays a whole role in the jury selection process. And I think it worked really well. And basically what we're doing here is having a trial for Mr. Freeze, who's been accused of killing these women. And I really enjoy the whole back and forth between the defense, and how they're trying to defend Mr. Freeze when Mr. Freeze gets put on trial or up on the bench to testify. He's like, you know, the only reason I admitted to killing these women is because Batman was crazy, because he was about to throw me off a building. And all that really made sense, right? Because after what happened in last issue, we know that he must be dealing with some kind of anguish. And we do see that in some ways, right? Like, when they're deliberating, the jury is, he goes to the bathroom and like rips a urinal off and throws it up against the wall and screams. And I'm sure like that had to have some police officers come into the bathroom and find out what's going on. You know what I mean? But it really worked, right? It wasn't like, trying to push over the fact that like, hey, this guy's really emotional right now, right? Like, I've always made the emo Batman joke since this run started. And even though he's showing his emotions, I didn't feel that here. And that's why I really enjoyed this issue. Of course, at the end, we have deliberations, and everyone pretty much assumes that Freeze is guilty, except Bruce Wayne, and that's kind of where we're left off at the end of the issue. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, I love Lee Weeks' art, so I don't have anything to say about the art. The art is beautiful, it's gorgeous. I wish Lee Weeks would do 300 books a week. Obviously, that's impossible for anybody to do. But I love him on Batman. It's just absolutely brilliant. But the writing, I think, is what really excels here for me. And like I said, this is one of my favorite issues of this 51 issue run that we've had so far. And this felt to me a lot more like what I wanted out of the Batman book. And if this is the direction that we're going to be seeing in the next 50 issues of Tom King's run, then I'm all in. You know, I was kind of, I turned around a little bit with issue 50, but now here with 51, I'm really sold on it. I love the fact that Nightwing is, or Dick Grayson is Batman, at least during this trial, right? Because if Bruce is gone and he can't leave the courthouse, somebody's got to be Batman, so nobody assumes that Batman's not there. And of course, Gordon knows it's not Batman, right? He's like, oh, you're not him, you're the other him. And I like that whole thing. This issue worked really well for me, and I cannot wait to see how this arc ends. I'm going to have to rate this one a 4.5 out of 5. Wow! Take that, Daryl and Chris. You thought I would never do it. It's finally here. I really dug it, so I'm glad this book shaped up the way that it did. All right, that's going to wrap up the top of the pile. Let's get on to the books coming out tomorrow on New Comic Book Day in a little segment I like to call the Comic Predictor. And first up from Valiant Comics, I've got Britannia, Lost Eagles of Rome, number one. This is a four-issue miniseries written by Peter Milligan with art by Robert Gill and covers by Carrie Nord. And this is volume three, so, I mean, you may be a little lost as to what's happening, but we had two miniseries previously. This follows immediately upon the last one, so, the main character, Antonius Axia, he's the world's first detective, and he will have, his friend, oh god, what was her name? Aquilia, the gladiatrix from the second miniseries. They're gonna be sent off into the wilds because, a group of Germanic tribes, I don't think they name them, but, there's a group of Germanic tribes that have gone up against the Roman army, and they've stolen the, eagles, which of course are insignias that the Roman army used, and they're very powerful, and they signified what Rome was, and apparently they may have some mysterious magical powers. We'll see. You know, judging by what we've had in the previous couple of volumes of this, the magic thing ends up getting scienced away, and I do kind of like that, because it gives you that mysticalness throughout the series until it's explained away. And I really enjoy this time period. There's a couple of movies dealing with the Lost Eagles, right? So there was a legion of Roman soldiers that disappeared, and there's a movie that they made based on that. I want to say it's just called The Lost Eagle, but I could be wrong. Anyways, I really enjoyed that movie, and I'm looking forward to Britannia Lost Eagles of Rome, number one, again, from Valiant Comics. Next up on the list from Marvel Comics, I'm going to throw this in here, but I got to say, I'm very reserved about this. Mr. and Mrs. X number one. The only reason I'm putting it on the list is that it's written by Kelly Thompson. And of course she did the Jessica Jones book that I talked about in this episode that I absolutely thought was brilliant. And the art is by Oscar Bezaldúa. And of course this follows Rogue and Gambit after their wedding at the end of X-Men Gold number 30. And, yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. I'm not a huge Gambit fan. Let me just say that. I used to love Rogue a lot more than I do now. But I'm curious to see what this series will be about and how they're going to handle their relationship now that they're married. Because, you know, for us reading X-Men for a long time, we've kind of thought this was going to happen for at least 35, 40 years. So we'll see how that ends up being. But I'm going to put it on the list just based on Kelly Thompson writing it. And, of course, I'll throw in Infinity Wars Prime. This is Jerry Duggan and Mike Iodato. This will be the first issue. I mean, we've had all these things leading up to Infinity Wars, but this is kind of what's going to kick off the summer event, the Infinity Wars event, and I'm looking forward to it. I've enjoyed all the tie-ins, especially the Darkhawk one. I love Mike Diodato's art, so that for me is almost an immediate sell. If he's on the book, chances are I'm going to buy it. But yeah, Infinity Wars Prime number one. This will be a $4.99 book. Just heads up. But I'm looking forward to checking it out. Over on to Image Comics. This is another one that I'm kind of iffy to recommend, but I'm very curious to see how this turns out. Is New World number one. This is a 5-issue miniseries from Image Comics, written by Alish Kott with art by Trod Moore. And I'll read the synopsis. The United States of America after the Second Civil War. Two lovers meet. One, a straight-edge vegan hacker, anarchist boy, oh my, that's a whole lot of stuff, with a penchant for messing with the state. The other, a chaotic, hedonistic cop with a reality TV show and a license to kill. This shouldn't happen, and yet, somehow it does. And soon, the entire state of New California is after them. Alright, this sounds cool. I've been really digging Cal Exit. I know there's only like 3 issues out, and I don't know, it's like on hiatus and then not a hiatus, who knows. But, it almost seems like something that would come out of that whole world, but set in the future. And I like that kind of thing. I'm a little iffy about recommending this book simply because of Alish Kott. And there have been a couple of things that he's done that I really enjoy, but the majority of it for me has been a real miss, but like the hits were like real hits. You know what I mean? So I don't know. That's why I'm kind of iffy about recommending it. This is also a $4.99 book. So even for myself, I'm kind of having a tough time figuring out if I want to dive into this, but I do have the first issue on my pull list, so we'll see how it goes. I'll definitely be talking about this next week. If we go on over to DC Comics, let's talk about Action Comics 1001 very briefly. If you don't know, this is Brian Michael Bendis with art by Pat Gleason, and it's the first issue of Action Comics with Bendis taking over, so I'm excited to read it. I mean, do I need to say anything about this? I talk about Superman in Action enough, I think, where I probably don't need to say anything else, right? Like, Bendis is here, guys. Just go read this. The Superman stuff he's done so far is fantastic, and I look forward to seeing how Action Comics will be different, but complementary to the Superman run. Of course, also from DC, Justice League Dark number 1, James Tynion IV with Alvaro Eduardo Martinez, and, I mean, it's Justice League Dark. It's got Detective Chimp in it, and Man-Bat, and Zatanna, and Swamp Thing, and Wonder Woman for some reason. I'm really excited for this book. I like the magical side of the DC universe. I don't think it's played with enough. I love Swamp Thing. Zatanna is one of my favorite characters over at DC. So I can't wait to read this. They're going to be tying this into the Wonder Woman book, I think, as well. There's going to be kind of a crossover where Wonder Woman becomes sort of an evil witch thing. Whatever that is. I don't know. I want to see this. I'm excited to check out Justice League Dark. I cannot wait. I've been waiting for this. When did it announce this? Like 6 months ago? It's been a long time coming, so I cannot wait to see how this one plays out. I've got an Oni Press book on the list that I'm really curious to check out. It's called The Long Con, and I thought at first it was going to be a reprint, because there was a book called The Long Con. I don't remember what publisher it came out with, but it was a few years ago, and it was brilliant. This is not that book. This is a different book, and I'm going to read it because it just seems so quirky and different. And The Long Con is literally about the longest con ever. So it seems that 5 years ago, there was this traumatic event in the world, and it obliterated anything within 50 miles of this convention center. And the thing is, there was a con going on at the convention center. And while everything around it within 50 miles was destroyed, the con never stopped. And now this journalist is sent to investigate what's been happening. Once people realized that there were still people living and still having this convention, this journalist was sent to investigate it. And apparently he was there the day before the convention started, or, you know, things around it blew up. It sounds really interesting and different, and I'm curious to see how this plays out. What has happened in the 5 years that these people have been basically having a convention? Like, can you imagine a 5-year convention? I can't. I would kill myself probably. But I'm very curious. Long Con number 1 from Oni Press. This is Dylan Mikonis and Emily Denish. Finally, on the Comic Predictor, I need to talk about Bone Parish, number 1. This is from Boom Studios, written by Cullen Bunn, and art by Mustafa Karasu, and cover by Lee Garbett. The Lee Garbett cover, holy moly. It's like a cocaine mound shaped like a skull with... anyways, check it out. And, you know, Cullen was on the podcast last week, so if you didn't listen to that episode, I recommend you do. We talked about Bone Parish in the last few minutes of the episode. But basically, it's about a family who starts, they get into the drug business, but the drug that they sell is made from the ground up bones of dead bodies. So you get these kind of hallucinations where you get to experience the dead person's life. Kind of, like iZombie in that way. Whereas, you know, in iZombie, they need to eat the brain to get that experience. Here is, you know, this drug that is made up of ground up bones. But this is going to be a whole different direction, and I look forward to seeing this book. Spoiler alert, I've already read it, and it was brilliant, but I definitely recommend you pick this one. Again, Bone Parish number 1 from Boom Studios. Definitely, definitely, definitely might be at the top of my list of books coming out this week. And that is going to wrap up this episode of Comic Talk Today. Thank you all for listening. Of course, if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on Twitter at Geekvine. nerdlygen@gmail.com is the email address. I'll be back tomorrow with some kind of episode. Thanks for listening. Catch you then.